Good morning. We welcome each of you here this morning, and those of you at Bayview Campus by video, we welcome you as well. As was mentioned earlier, we are doing a series entitled Run. And this series is something that has motivated me. I guess there's a number of things that motivated me. And by the way, this morning we are going to cross the finish line. This is the last one for this series, and we'll begin another series in the fall. But there are many things that just I felt God was using to lead me into this series as something that was important for me, and I trust for all of us. One of those things was a young man by the name of Jim Willett, and I've shared a little bit of his story before. But Diane, one day back in just last year, handed me an article out of the Era. And it had a story of Jim Willett, and he had cancer, and he was now running and training as a runner, a long-distance runner. And so I found him, I discovered him, and went and met with him for coffee one afternoon. And through that time, over the period of about 9 months now, we have developed a good friendship. And Jim was a fellow who had cancer. He obviously hadn't always had cancer. He was a trainer. He was fit. He was healthy. He trained others. He showed others how to live that great life of being healthy and fit and running. But it was back in January of 2010 that he came out of a doctor's office with a label across his chest called cancer. And he couldn't believe it, because this was the kind of thing that happened to other people, but not to somebody who was young. Well, he's 38 and healthy and fit and, you know, eats well, trains well, works well, runs well, does all these things that you're supposed to do to keep healthy. And now at 37 actually at the time, you have cancer. And so as I met with him, I mean, he just has completed the run across the Gobi Desert. And as I talked with him, I wrote down these notes, and I thought I'd just kind of glance at them this morning and read them to you. It was when he said he had colon cancer that he went in and went through a very long and grueling process of chemotherapy, and some of you have been through that. The doctors placed a chemoport inside his chest, a chemoport, and that's to, you know, facilitate the chemotherapy sessions. But it was during that long and grueling time that he was finding himself emotionally just plummeting, just going down. It seemed like life was over. But he decided to turn, as he puts it, something that was negative into something that was positive. So that's when he decided he would train and run for something beyond what he had ever thought possible for him, and that was to run the Gobi Desert, which was 250 kilometers in 7 days. Only his goal was to do it in 6 days. So he made this goal, and he decided to begin training, even while he was undergoing chemotherapy and the side effects of that. And he began just with a few kilometers, and then a few more, and then up to six, and then up to 10. And he worked hard at this. He decided that he wanted to run for a group called Trails. This is an organization that ministers to high-risk kids in the inner city of Toronto. And they take them out into the wilderness, and there they help them to face obstacles and to overcome obstacles and to realize that they can go way beyond the limits of what they ever dreamt possible for their lives. And so he thought, with running, I'm going to raise money for these kids. And so this is what he was doing as he trained. The Gobi Desert is a self-supporting race. In other words, you have to carry everything on your back that you need for the week. Your sleeping bag, your food, your medicine, just anything that you need at all, up to 20 pounds. And so he has trained and with this pack on his back, and he ran. It began that day in the Gobi Desert race with his 20-pound backpack. He was also running for personal reasons, and he says, "You know, as I ran, especially that first day, and I looked out over the beauty of the desert and the mountains and the canyons, I thought how how beautiful it is to have life, how wonderful it is to be alive and to enjoy the journey that we're in, no matter what the obstacles, because the race soon brought to his mind that life also has obstacles and tremendous challenges mixed with the beauty, that both of them can come on the same day. But this need to endure that which is difficult in life. He said that day four was a day of extreme heat. They suddenly hit 60 degrees Celsius. Now, can you imagine? I can't imagine kind of sitting, breathing in the shade. Can you imagine running in the desert at 60 degrees Celsius? And they were running through the Turpan Valley, or basin actually, Turpan Basin, which is the second lowest piece of real estate on the face of the earth. The lowest being what? The Dead Sea. Turpan Basin is the second lowest. And he says, as he was running through the salt flats there, do we have the pictures of this as we're moving along through it? There's Jim right there, and there's the salt flats. He said that it was so hot just coming up off those salt flats that the heat was actually melting the glue in his running shoes. And he went through several running shoes as his shoes were just falling apart as he ran because of the heat. But you could feel the heat just emanating off the salt flats into his face. At times he felt like just peeling over. In fact, he went over at different times and just vomiting, and he would then run, and then he would walk, and then he would shuffle, and then run, and then walk, and then shuffle, just one step at a time. And a few weeks ago we talked about that sometimes it gets down to that. The race of life that God has called for us to run, the race of faith, is sometimes just one step at a time. It's just the strength to put your foot in front of your other foot. That's what God gives the grace for. And he used that phrase. I found I just had to run by putting one step in front of the other. That night, there was a symbolical ceremony that he wanted to go through. You see, when the doctor removed the chemo port from his chest, normally the doctors would just throw that away. And Jim asked if he could keep it. And the doctor said, sure, if you want it. So he gave it to him. And Jim said, I kept it. I wasn't sure why I wanted it. And I stuffed it in my backpack, and as I was running through the desert on that day, stage 3 and stage 4, I was thinking of cancer, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, and he thought, at stage 4, tonight what I'm going to do is I'm going to bury my chemo port in the sand. And that night he had a little ceremony, and he buried his chemo port in the sand. He said it was just a few ounces in weight. There's not much weight to them. But he said it seemed like from that point on, I had the weight of the world lifted from me. And I ran in weightlessness as I moved on from that particular point. He told me that it was an act of defiance, a resolve to triumph over the worst things that life can bring to you, to leave behind what is in the past of your life and to press forward to what is ahead. What does that sound like? Here's somebody that's never read that verse. But he said, I want to forget the past, and I want to be able to move forward to everything that's there in front of me. Day 5 was the longest day, he said. We had to run about 80K, extreme heat, very hot. He says, I passed herds of wild camels and herds of wild horses, and you had to watch out for snakes on the trail and for scorpions and for, if you ever heard of camel spiders. These are camel spiders, they grow anything from here to here. And he says they're vicious things. Their bite will not kill you, but their bite will mean that you need medical attention. And he says they actually have little beady eyes. They look at you and they're, I don't want to turn anybody away here, but they have fangs and they actually will attack you. They come after you. And he says that night you could hear them running over the tent all night. So he was made sure that he stayed inside his tent. Just thought I'd throw that in there for free. Beware of camel spiders. But you know, he's just as life is woven with, you know, between the risks and the struggles, woven with beauty and generosity and goodness. He said in that same race that day, I was running through acres and acres of green fields of cantaloupe and watermelon and colorful people called the Uyghurs. have a picture of, these are all his pictures that he gave me permission to use, colorful people. But he says that one time he was running by a group of workers in the field, and they called him over because they hadn't seen somebody running in the kind of gear that he had on, let alone somebody who was white. So they called him over, and one fellow took a great big machete, and he said, "I got a little nervous." And he took that thing back, and he lifted up a watermelon and swung, and he broke that thing up just like this, and he said, he handed me the watermelon. So he said, here in the midst of all this hardship was this man giving me something out of generosity. That night, his mind was focused, he said again, on the attack of cancer. He said, as I lay there and the sun was setting, I began just to think about the attack of cancer, where my life had come, where my life was going. And he said, I mused about the finish line because the next day was going to be the finish line. There's a picture, I think, next of that night. No, skipped it. Go back. There we are. And he just mused about just life in general. And he says, as he was musing about life and the good things and the difficult things, he says, suddenly a gust of wind came up from the desert that just came ripping through. And he said, the sand just bit like sandpaper into my skin. And so I pulled my t-shirt up over my face just so my eyes could look out. And he said, the canopy that we were sitting under just whipped up, and the wind took it up about 30 feet into the air and away from us. And he said, by the time we refound our canopy and brought it back and staked it down, he says, I began to think to myself, what a microcosm of life. Everything can seem so serene, quiet, moving good, well, things are good. And then suddenly out of nowhere comes this biting wind, this struggle, this risk, this harm, this trial in your life. For him, it was cancer. I was speaking to a man last night, 54 years of age. He said, July 17th this summer, he was having some dizziness. So he went into his doctor, who sent him to a specialist, and he now has found out that he has multiple brain tumors. Doesn't know where it's heading. Doesn't look good. Christian guy, great guy. But it's just so fresh in his mind, and he kept breaking down, saying, you know, I never expected this a month ago. I didn't dream that this would be happening to me. These things can happen to any of us. We don't know what a month brings, what a day brings. We don't even know what the next hour will bring for our lives. Life is just that way. But as Jim told me, I like this. He said there's also a resolve to persevere, to go the distance, one step at a time, from one checkpoint to the next checkpoint, from one hill to the next. On that final day, he says, we were running down through the slot canyons. I think the next picture will have a picture of the slot canyons. They're hills like this. They're high. They come down right almost to a point. And he says, this is a little trail between these two 45-degree angles, and you're running down through what they call these slot canyons on the way down. He's got 14 kilometers to go to reach the finish line, and finally he reaches it. And I thought it was interesting that while many runners were running with the flag of their country on the back, many were running with a sign for a loved one, Jim ran with a note on his back that he had written to cancer. And it says, "Cancer, you attacked me because that is what you do. And I know, given the opportunity, you'll do it again and again. But you should know who you're up against. Today's finish line is just the starting line for so many other things. I will fight you every step of the way. I'm stronger than you ever thought possible. And I will never, ever quit." Jim told me that as they were running into this little village in the desert, and the drums were beating and people were cheering, he said he began just a high step. You can see him there, just high stepped. After all of that running, here's a fellow with cancer, out of 150 runners, about 30 didn't finish. He came in 24th, and he high-stepped across that line to the drums and the cheering of the people in this little village. I like the thing he said to me, and we have given this quote right here in the next slide. It says, and this is what Jim told me, "Crossing the finish line didn't feel like the end of something significant. It felt like I was crossing into the beginning of something monumental. It started like when Jesus said, "It is finished." He didn't mean everything was finished. He meant this phase was finished and it has opened something monumental. It's the beginning of something monumental. That's how Jim felt at the end of this race. And as we in our lives come to the point where we've crossed the finish line or we approach the finish line, it is not just the end of things, it's the beginning of something monumental. And with that thought in mind, I'd like to take your attention, please, to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, where Paul, as he does so many times, and in the Bible you see this reference to running. Paul is talking, or if Paul wrote this book, or whoever wrote it, is talking about running the race that God has set before us. We are all in a race, and God has given you the race. He's given you the course to follow. It is not an easy run. That's why we are to run with endurance. But he says here in verse 2, we do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, on whom our faith depends from start to finish. It's one thing to start the race. Maybe you can remember the day when you started the race of faith. How's it going today? 5 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later. How's it going today? So many people begin well and they end so poorly. But Jesus gives us the strength and He has the will that we should start well and finish well. Keep your eyes on Jesus, on whom our faith depends from start to what? Finish. Start to finish. Now in the chapter before, chapter 11, to put this in the right context, there are many runners that have run this race before us. On the next slide, you see some. There's Noah, there's Abraham, there's Sarah, there's Moses, there's Rahab, there's David, and on the list goes of big name runners, people that we can name. But then it says, in around verse 35, and there were others. What were their names? We don't know their names. But we do know a little bit about how they ran. It says here in chapter 11, beginning around 35, it says that they were mocked, they were whipped, they were hungry, they were oppressed. They were mistreated. In fact, the writer says the world was not even worthy of them. They ran an incredibly difficult run. But they what? Finished. We don't know their names. They're anonymous runners. Their names have long gone into history, but God knows their names. Even Paul couldn't put their names down, or the writer of this book couldn't put their names down. But they're here, and they finished. And thinking of that, then the writer goes into chapter 12 and says, therefore, since we are surrounded by these huge crowd of witnesses, these who have run before us are now up in the stands, and as we've studied in this series, they are cheering us on as we run our race. But the point of chapter 12 is that the race is not over because we are still running. We run in the path along the same race of faith that they ran in. They ran it with all of their strengths and their weaknesses. Some of them didn't run so well. Some of them were terrific failures. But they all got back up and they kept running. And now we are to run that same race, verse 2, from start to finish, like they did. It's like they have taken that baton. You ever run a baton race? They've run their race and they've slid that baton. They've smacked it into your hand. They bow out of the race and now you are running. And everything they did in their run, you are now carrying on in this legacy of faith, and you are running the race. It's not a perfect race, but it's an amazing race that you're running. You know, the Athens Classic Marathon is a race that is run every year in Athens, and about 3,000 to 5,000 runners. And it commemorates the first marathon that was ever run. And we've talked about that as well. Phidippides, remember him? I know you all remember Phidippides. Phidippides ran from the Battle of Marathon, where the Athenians, outnumbered by the Persians, had smacked them a great defeat. The Athenians had been victorious, and now Pheidippides was sent to run back and let the Athenians know about the victory. And he ran 42 kilometers from the Battle of Marathon, the plains of Marathon, to the plains of Attica, which are right in the middle of the city of Athens today, and told them about this victory. And that's where this run goes. It's a difficult run through hot and rugged terrain, mountains. I was reading the most difficult thing about the run, though, was that for this past year, for 4,000 runners, they had four porta potties. That's one porta potty for 1,000 people. Just think about it. No, don't think about it. But I thought I'd throw that in there for free as well. But in the once the main runners had come in, those that ran first, once they were finished, suddenly all the others, we don't know their names, began to hobble in. Some were in leg braces. Some were injured. Some were in shape. Some were out of shape. Some were fit. Some were not fit. But they entered the stadium, and as all the others entered the stadium, the crowd had waited to see everyone finish, and they came to their feet, and they were applauding these others that were coming in. And at the six-hour mark, and that's when the race was over. There's a six-hour allotment for this race. At 6 hours, the last runner came in, hobbled in, and everyone applauded the last runner. Now just think of that picture. Everyone applauding that last runner. Hebrews 11:39, all these people in Hebrews 11 that have run before us received God's approval because of their faith. Why? Because they had run the race of faith. They started and they finished. And yet none of them received all that God had promised. Why have they not received the prize? Because their race is over, but the race is not over. For they can't receive the prize at the end of the race until we finish the race. And so we are now running the same race that they have run. And one day, the clock of time is going to end. We don't know the hour. Even Jesus didn't know the hour. But he said that one day, it's going to end. The hour will run out. And the time will be stopped. And the last runner will cross the finish line. So the race isn't over, says chapter 12. You're still running. You haven't crossed the finish line. You know how I know that your race is still going? Because your heart is still going. Your lungs are still breathing. You're in the race. And so run. That's what chapter 12 is all about. Run! Look at the lives of those in the past and how they've run. You say, but I'm having a hard time. You don't know, Pastor David, just what I'm going through. I have this and I've experienced that and I failed here. Every one of this, every runner that has ever run has failed and fallen flat in their face, and have come in scraped and bruised. But they ran, and so we are to run. Run! And as we've mentioned before, we declare that Jesus is Lord by the way that we run. And Paul is really saying, either run and put your best into it and run with passion, or get out of the race and let someone else take your spot. It's not a game. Philippians 3, verse 12 says this. Paul wrote, I don't mean to say that I've already achieved these things, that I've already reached perfection, but I press on to possess the perfection for which Christ first possessed me. I haven't arrived, but I'm pressing on to possess everything that Jesus Christ one day possessed me for. I've not achieved it, but I focus on this one thing, forgetting the past, forgetting your past failures, forgetting your past losses, even more so, forgetting your past successes. Because all of those things are a graveyard and there is no resurrection power in them. Forgetting your past, because your past is either an anchor that is holding you back or it's a rudder that's propelling you from behind going forward. What is your past to you? Paul says, I'm looking forward to what lies ahead. I press on. I strain with every sinew and muscle in me to reach the end of the race, the skopos, the mark, the goal, the line. I think there are two goals, really. The one I know what it is. The other one I'm not sure what it is. The one I know that it is mentioned here. It's called perfection. That's why Paul says, I haven't arrived yet. Spiritual and moral perfection, where you are just like Jesus. We haven't arrived yet. We've all got a long way to go, so we keep running. But he says in verse 10, I want to know Christ and to experience the mighty power that raised him from the dead. I want to suffer with him, sharing in his death, so that one way or another I will experience the resurrection from the dead. You see, the purpose of the run, the purpose of the trials and the affliction that God sees that we need to encounter, the purpose of running through the desert is to come to the end of ourselves, to realize that I can't do this on my own, that this is a hopeless thing other than Christ, to come to the end of your own resources and to find Christ to be everything. In other words, to know Christ is to die to yourself. And then when you die, to be resurrected with the power of Christ. Paul said, I'm crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but who? Christ lives in me. That's because we die to ourselves and we are raised to a new resurrection power by which we live. We haven't arrived yet. There's that final perfection. When we see Jesus, we'll be like him, for we will be see him just as he is, John tells us. But in the meantime, as we looked at last week, it is stage perfection. Every stage we come to, every day we live, although we are not perfect and we will never be perfect until we get to heaven, every day we should become a little more like Jesus, not a little less. And every affliction that comes our way draws a little more of the self out of us and injects us more with the resurrection power of Christ. So that in fact, the longer we go, the more we realize that I am running this race in the power that Christ has given me. Yes, I can do all things. How? Through Christ who gives me strength. That's the perfection that Paul is speaking about here. There's also the perfection of a resurrected body one day, down in verse 21. He will take our weak mortal bodies, these bodies that get sick, and get cancer, and get brain tumors, and get tired, and wear down, he'll change them into glorious bodies like his own. One day, he's going to give us a body just like him, so that we will be like Jesus inside and out. No, we will not be God. We won't be Jesus. We will be just like him. And then Paul goes on to say in verse 14, I press on to reach the end of the race and receive the heavenly prize. That's the one I'm not sure just what it is. Bible doesn't say too much about it, but just that we'll receive the prize. The picture here is that when a runner runs and crosses the finish line and wins, they mount the podium and they receive a prize. In Paul's day, they received an olive branch around the head, a little crown. Today, at the Olympics, you receive a medal. And so we will cross the finish line one day, we will mount the podium, and we'll receive a medal from Jesus Christ. Again, I'm not so sure just what that all means, but in closing, let me just turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 4, to the last words that the Apostle Paul wrote. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 6, Paul said, as for me, my life has been poured out as an offering to God. The time of my death is near. Paul was locked up. This was the hour of his death. Notice how realistic Paul is. There is no illusion from Paul here that he's going to run more laps. He says, no, I got a feeling this is the last lap that I'm going to run. Things weren't looking good. And you know, it's healthy to face situations with reality. And not just to always be thinking, though, well, God's going to heal me and God's going to look after me. He is, and he may. But to also realize that the greatest miracle you will ever experience one day, other than your salvation, is to die and go to heaven to be with Him forever. What a miracle that's going to be. A sinner saved by grace, which I didn't deserve, living forever in heaven one day. And so Paul faces the reality of life and the hardships of it in a very honest way, but with hope. As my friend Jim said, it's not like the end of something, it's like crossing into the beginning of something monumental. It's crossing a line from here to there. I fought a good fight. It's a tough race. And you have to fight a good fight. You have circumstances to battle. We have to battle temptations, habits, distractions, allurements, all kinds of things, not to mention the spiritual enemy of our soul, Satan. Life is a battle. But he says, I fought a good fight, I have finished the race, and I have remained faithful. Again, so many start well, and they finish so poorly. Not Paul. He is here in prison. It's looking like the end of his race, but you can just feel his heart pounding for Christ. And he is still, you can hear his feet still hitting the pavement as he runs his race. He's going to run it right through the finish line. With so many of us, I can think of all kinds of people that seem to be running so well at one point in their life, and now it's like I don't even see them in the race. Allurements. Complacency. They've tried to find relief from the pain and the hardship. Or they found success. They've been allured into the things of the world. I think these are the kind of things that Paul is speaking about here. Or they have the wrong focus. They've got their focus on people and they feel hurt and they feel disappointed. And so they've got their focus wrong. And they've stepped out of the race. See, one of them here, verse 10, Demas has deserted me because he loves the things of this life. Interesting, the first time Paul was in prison, he says, Demas is with me, stands by me. Second time, a couple years later, no Demas. Got too hard. I don't know really what it was here, earthly ambitions, pleasure. The Greeks placed high value in pleasure and leisure, you know, just getting away for a rest. Making life easier for you, finding ways to get a break, stepping out of the race, even for a while, and so many of them never stepping back into the race. But he says in verse 11, Luke's with me and bring Mark with you. I like that. You know what? Mark was one of those runners that stumbled right out of the blocks. He ran out of the blocks and fell flat on his face. He just got a little ways with Paul and Barnabas, and it got too hard. And he says, I'm sorry, guys, I'm out of here. It really ticked Paul off. He had a hard job getting over that. Isn't it interesting that he got back up and kept running? And you can too. He became a proven, strong endurance runner. And you can too. That Paul says, he is useful to me. Bring him here in my imprisonment. Verse 8. Now the prize awaits me, the crown of righteousness. Again, I'm not sure what that is. It's something there. Awaits me. The righteous judge the Lord will give to me on that day of his return. Rather than focusing on his execution, which is just maybe tomorrow, rather than focusing on what it's like to get your head cut off or to be burned at a stake or to die of cancer or just how it's going to end, he just kept running. He saw the prize. And a smile comes over his face that I doubt if the guard sitting next to him really understood. You know, it's like all of you who are starting school in just a few weeks, I thought I'd remind you of that. Hey, parents. And but you know, from earliest grades right up into university, what do you think of? There's the peer stuff, the pressures. There's fitting in. There's exams and homework and teachers, good and bad, and all of that stuff. But you know what you do? You look ahead at walking across that stage and getting the diploma. That's what you look at. And you know, parent, maybe you're at home and you're housekeeping for little people with sticky fingers and dirty diapers. And it goes on day after day after day after day, and you're getting tired. You know what you do? You look beyond the household of little people to a household of adults one day who are following Jesus and serving Him and who love Him and who are passing the baton to the next generation down. That's what you look to. Paul says, I look to the prize. And not only that, he says in verse 8 that that prize is not just for me, but for all who eagerly look forward to His glorious return. When you cross the finish line and you mount the podium and you receive the medal from Jesus is the picture. I don't know what the medal really is, but I do know the words that are going to accompany the presentation. Can you imagine hearing from Jesus as He puts that medal over your neck? He says, well done, good and faithful servant. Can you imagine hearing that from Jesus? You want to say, but Lord, I failed You. I should have done this. I wish I could do it over again. He says, look, just like those in Hebrews 11, remember David, Abraham, sometimes you read their stories and you think, they're the ones we're to follow. Jesus says to you, that's all gone. He looks at the big picture and He says, well done, good and faithful servant, runner. You ran well. You started. Yeah, you had some stumbles and some failures, but you stayed in the race and you crossed the finish line and you're my servant. You're my runner. You've run for my glory. And I'm just giving you this as a reminder that you've run for me and of my faithfulness to you and my love for you. And now you're finally home. Just think of it. You're going to be home and you're going to live with Jesus forever and ever and ever. You see, the things that are worth attaining are worth sacrificing for. So take the hit today. Take the sacrifice. Take the affliction. Become more like Jesus and run with endurance the race that God has set before you and cross the finish line when it's your time. Amen. Lord Jesus, as that finish line approaches every one of us this morning, but we don't know when, may we be able to say like the Apostle Paul, I have fought a good fight. Not a perfect one, but perfection has been my goal. And I've fought a good fight for that goal. And I have now finished the race. I can look at it realistically. I don't need to live another day because I've lived life to the full for You, Jesus. You can take me now. I'm ready. And I've been faithful because You have been faithful. Oh God, help us to run with endurance the race that You have set before us, keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, upon whom our faith depends from start to finish. Amen.